Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents When Monsters Love by Debbie Cassidy, narrated by Arlene Seberg. Chapter 1. Rue. Flying while wrapped in Michael's arms was vastly different from being carried by Shem. In Shem's arms, I was able to see the world go by, just as he saw it. But with Michael, there was only the warm glow of his celestial light. If not for the pressure of his grip around me, I would have doubted I was airborne at all. The sensation of disembodiment freaked me out. How much farther until we got to the Golden City? How much longer before I found myself trapped inside the Celestial's home? I'd made the decision to leave Shem and the Watchers and go with Michael to protect the relic shard we'd found in the tower. Doing so saved Shem by giving him and the other Watchers time to get away. But it was more than that. I needed to get behind the Golden City's walls, because the second relic piece was inside there. Cabiel's vision had showed it to me. Not the exact location, but enough to know it was inside the Celestial Stronghold. But once I got beyond those walls, how the heck would I find the relic piece? I couldn't risk opening a channel to the Morningstar power, or they might sense it. So, then how would I track it down? There'd been no time to think that part through. No time to plan and consider all the implications of giving myself to Michael. The only thing that mattered in the moment when Michael and his troop had descended on us was making sure Shem got away with the relic piece we'd found. Getting behind enemy lines was merely a bonus. I'd have to convince Michael that I'd stayed with Shem under duress. I'd have to lie and make him believe that I had no idea why Shem wanted me, because Michael was the only thing standing between me and the Dominions, the higher-ranked Celestials who could read minds. I needed to buy enough time to find the relic, then figure out a way to get the heck out of the "We're almost there, Rue." Michael's voice resonated around me and my inner monologue died. Almost there? Almost trapped. The band of anxiety wrapped around my chest tightened a fraction so that when I spoke, my words spilled out in a breathy whisper. It would help if I could see where we are. You want to see? He sounded perplexed, as if it hadn't occurred to him that I'd prefer to have my full faculties about me. It was on the tip of my tongue to say something to that effect, but I bit back the words. Antagonizing him wouldn't achieve anything. Instead, I injected a gentle plea into my tone. I'd feel better if I could see. This feels odd. I apologize. I was merely trying to make the journey more comfortable. I appreciate that, but it's disconcerting not being aware of my surroundings. Yes, yes, I suppose it would be. The light dimmed and a breeze kissed my cheeks. The world below came into focus, treetops kissed by moonlight whizzing by. His chest was pressed to my back, his arms bands of steel around my torso, holding me to him effortlessly. The only sound was the periodic beat of his huge white wings, golden tips gleaming like metal in the moonlight. Shem coasted a lot, so his wings beat less frequently, but then his wings were bat-like, powerful in a different way to Michael's armor-feathered ones. My chest ached with foreboding. What if I never saw him again? What if I never made it back to the bunker or bastion? No, stop it. You can do this, Rue. Dark shadows ruffled the foliage below, sweeping beneath us and keeping pace. What's that? The question was a stupid reflex because I knew the answer before Michael responded. Monsters. His voice rose easily above the wind that cocooned us. They can't hurt you. I've got you. And he expected me to be grateful for that. But it wasn't me the monsters wanted. It was Michael and his troops. It was their light. The creatures below us were some of the first created by God. Soulless and without celestial light, they'd been locked away by their creator for eons. And now that they were free, they craved celestial lights, desperate on some primitive level to be made whole. But I couldn't let Michael know that I knew this. He couldn't know how much Shem had confided in me. He'd seen Shem and the Watchers in my mind, and I'd told him that I knew that they were Watchers. How would I explain that? Think, damn it. There, Michael said, the city walls. The Golden City rose out of the shadows like a jewel set against dark velvet. Silver spires gleamed in the moonlight, safe behind a monstrous gray wall that seemed to rise almost as high as us. It stretched for what looked like miles, maintaining its height, and down below, shadows clawed at its surface, skittering up the stone only to be blasted away by invisible forces. The air shimmered in the wake of each expulsion. Now this I needed him to explain to me. What is that?
Warding to keep the creatures out, Michael said. Nothing can get into the city unless carried in by a celestial.
The warding is strong. Like the runes that had existed on each base's walls? No, there were no runes here. This was a different kind of power. We were almost at the wall now, and the mass that surged up against it grew bigger. So many Type 4 beasts climbing over one another in an attempt to scale the stone barrier. They could sense the light, sense the power, and they wanted it. The screeches, clicks, and skittering sounds clawed at the air.
Don't worry, Michael said. You'll be safe within the walls. Shem won't be able to get to you. That's what I was afraid of.
Michael, we have airborne incoming, one of the Celestials flanking us called out. For one crazy moment, I thought that maybe Shem had come after me, but then I spotted the Razorbeaks headed our way.
Move, Michael ordered. Get beyond the wards.
They put on a burst of speed, pushing us toward the city walls and the shimmer that rose off the parapets and curved over the city like a dome. My heart pounded against my ribs. I hadn't come this far to get chomped on. This wasn't my first time up against the Razorbeaks, but the last time I'd had Shem at my back. Shem, who'd scared the fuck out of me, but had also made me feel safe. But Michael? I didn't know if he could take on one of these, let alone several. But it was okay, we were almost at the walls. We were going to make it. The Razorbeaks screeched at us in rage at being thwarted. Fuck you. The city rushed closer, and the panic inside me ebbed. One more moment, and the air beneath us erupted as the shadows below spit out a monstrous beast. It shot up, mammoth wings beating the air. It was huge, larger than a fucking bus.
Draken, one of the Celestials shouted.
Michael pulled us back, wings beating hard to draw us higher and away from the beast. The Draken's throat began to glow with inner fire. My scalp pricked, terror turning my blood to ice. What was that? What was it about to... It opened its mouth and let out a jet of blue flame. Chapter 2. Blue flame burned a path toward us, and for a moment it filled my vision completely. Heat seared my lungs and singed my skin. We were going to die. The Draken dropped. No, wait, we were shooting up into the stars. My stomach bottomed out, breath trapped in between a scream and a whoop of triumph as the spot below us became a sheet of flame. That would have been us. We could have died if Michael hadn't acted fast. And oh shit, the Draken was coming after us. Michael banked left, then made a sharp right, avoiding another jet of flame. The Draken behind us roared. The path to the city was clear. Where were the other Celestials? We dropped altitude quickly. Shit! I've got you. Michael gripped me tighter, then shot up toward the stars, narrowly avoiding another stream of fire. It hit the wards and spread outward, unable to get through. I was burning up one moment and icy the next, my lungs struggling for breath.
Almost there, Rue, Michael assured me.
He sounded calm, as if outmaneuvering a fire-breathing monster was an everyday occurrence for him, and who knew, maybe it was. The shimmering wall of the wards rushed up to meet us, but evading the Draken had given the Razorbeaks time to reach us. They rushed us from the left. Michael dove to evade them, then banked right, taking us away from the wards to avoid a jet of flame. The other Celestials were already at the wards. Why the fuck was this beast on our tail? Michael dove again, and the beasts below us surged toward us, climbing over each other to try to reach us. We blasted up and away, flying parallel to the wall so close that I could see the glowing red eyes of the Rippers attempting to scale it. Shit, shit, shit.
It's okay. It's all right, Michael said. I wanted to believe him. I had to.
Blue fire sliced across the sky and hit the wall.
Michael reared back, wings catching the air to take us out of the blast radius and hold us there until the flame dissipated before shooting forward toward the wards once more. But the area was now flooded with razorbeaks. "We're not going to make it." "Yes, yes we are," he said. The reason for his confidence emerged from beyond the walls in the form of celestials decked in shimmering bronze armor, wielding golden bows. They let fly a flurry of glowing arrows, hitting the razorbeaks and taking them down. We jettisoned forward, and for a moment I was blinded by tears as the wind ripped at my skin. The Draken's death cry echoed behind me. Then gentle heat spread over my skin and the sounds of the monsters faded away. The air trapped in my lungs exploded from my lips. "Rue, Rue, it's all right. You're safe. We're safe, look." We hovered, suspended over a parapet with the broken world spread out before us while the armored celestials took out the last of the airborne threat with their glowing arrows. "The sentries will clear the air now. We're safe." He turned us away from the shadowy dead world and toward the gleaming metropolis of the Golden City. From this altitude, the city was spread out beneath us like a feast for the eyes. Thick, stately towers lined with parapets and gaping arches, each holding a landing ledge, dotted the landscape. Some were taller than others, but all were set around a central tubular structure made of thick slabs of shimmering stone. It would have been perfect if not for the evidence of the human city that lay at its feet in the form of ruin and rubble, a reminder of what this land had housed before. "Each outer roost houses a regiment," Michael said. "Powers, virtues, principalities, and the lower-level angels. That is the Archangel Roost." He pointed to a silver-tipped spire. "When not in the central roost with other essential personnel, then I'm there." "The central roost is where the Dominions are?" "Yes, they are our leaders now that we are earthbound." Was it my imagination, or did he sound a little dubious about that? I didn't know him well enough to make a confident judgment, though. "Did the Dominions rule when you were in heaven?" Of course, Shem had explained this to me, but if I was going to get Michael to protect me from the Dominions, he had to believe I was as innocent and as clueless about the workings of the Celestial Army as possible. He tore his attention away from the landscape and fixed it on me. "The Dominion have always managed matters in heaven, but no, they didn't rule. So why are they in charge now?" He frowned slightly and my pulse sped up. Had I pushed too far? I kept my expression curious and as open as possible, and finally he sighed. "An army in chaos is no use to anyone. The Dominions brought order. They forged this city." He swept his arm out toward the landscape. "Our glorious new home." His tone was flat, and I dropped my gaze, not wanting him to know that I saw right through him. "It is beautiful." The Golden City was indeed impressive, but it was built on the ashes of my world.
"Yes, now we'll get you settled and we can talk."
He flew me down toward the city, past the towers. Buildings with no exits aside from windows, ledges, and parapets. My stomach trembled as we got closer and closer to the central roost.
"You're home now, Rue," Michael said.
No, I wasn't home. I'd just stepped into a prison. Chapter 3 Shem.
The relic piece sits heavy in my pack. The material between us is unable to mute its power. It washes over me, over us, taking the edge off the primal beasts that constantly threaten to overcome our minds and bodies. This relic piece, set close to the other one we have in our possession, will help me to stave off my bestial nature and allow me a little more power to channel to my watchers. We have this because of her. We escaped because of her. Rue. I squeezed my eyes closed for a beat and shoved down the twisted emotions that the thought of her in Michael's hands evokes. The pew is cool beneath my thighs. Our only stop before we head back to base at dawn. The last time we were here. Her scent fills my head and the ache in my chest intensifies. She holds a sliver of my soul, the better part, not just the fragment that can help us find the other relic pieces, but the part that makes me whole, the part connected to every heartbeat. Rue is more than a conduit to the power, more than someone who can open the doorway and feed us restorative energy. She's the female that I'm... Shem? Sark sits beside me. What do you want to do? Shit. I need to focus on the task at hand. We need to get the relic fragment back to base. Yes, I know what we need to do, but I'm asking you what it is you want to do. My gums ache from the pressure of grinding my teeth. It doesn't matter what I want, Sark. Want leads to destruction. He sighs. Don't you think you've punished yourself enough? Look around you, Sark. Look at this world. It will never be enough. Tumiel joins us, trailed by Zack. We've been talking, Tumiel says. Rue will get into the city. She may even succeed in finding the relic piece, but she won't be able to get out. There are no exits, not if you don't have wings, Zack adds. As if I don't know this. As if it hasn't been eating away at me ever since I allowed her to leave with the winged bastard. Fuck. We have to find a way to get her out, Zack says, as if it's the simplest thing. You want to go over enemy lines? I hate the sneer that curls my lips, hate the derision that drips from my tone, but this is the part I must play. Do you think there's any escape for us if we cross the wards? Zack smiles, his hazel eyes softening. I think there's hope. Damn him. Damn hope and its gentle hold. He's right, Tumiel says. We have wings. She doesn't. It only takes one of us to get her out. I know this too, but not if you're in a cell. There are four of us. More if we recruit watchers from the base, Sark adds. We're soldiers, Shem. Extraction is nothing new to us. The corner of his mouth tips. Granted, this is a particularly dangerous stronghold, but the prize is worth it. His eyes darken, his expression turning somber. The prize is everything. His words touch my battered soul, and hope's hold grows tighter on me. We need Rue to find the relic pieces, Tumiel says. Kabiel's vision may have led us to the location, but it was Rue opening the channel that put him back in touch with his power of prophecy. Without her, he will devolve again. Without her, we will all devolve. The morning star isn't powerful, yet it held power like a cage. Its fracture caused damage to the fabric of the world, expelled celestials from heaven and locked them out. But the power it held, that power is still trapped. But now it's trapped in a web that the relic pieces hold closed. Rue has direct access to that power when she opens a channel. The access that I should have. The path I can walk when I'm with her. When she's close, and our souls meet, we can touch the power and feed off it. We can survive long enough to put the relic back together. But without her, we'll devolve before we can finish the task. We hadn't thought this through. Fuck. Letting her go with Michael was the right call, Sark says. If anyone can get to that relic, if anyone can play Michael, then it's her. You know him. You know his feelings about humans. He'll protect her. It's in his nature to do so. Yes, Michael would have made the perfect watcher. A protector of humanity, treating it like a precious jewel, not to be tainted, not to be touched. Unlike me. But that was before. Now he's a minion, a pawn to the Dominions. He purged our party of humans, killed them because he was ordered to do so by the Dominions. Michael has always followed the word to the letter. Orders are his backbone. Yes, he will protect her for as long as he is able, but if they order him to kill her... Silence falls over us like a shroud. and for a moment it feels as if the church walls are pressing in on us. The residual power of the relic spreads through me, bringing a sense of calm with it. Nothing is more important than assembling it. Nothing is more important than fixing what I broke. And Rue is a part of that. She's a key. Sark is right. We must find a way to get her out. Not because I want to. Not because the thought of anyone hurting her makes me want to burn down the world. But because it's the only logical play if we have any hope of finishing what we started. I know what we have to do. We get the relic back to base. Zack's shoulders droop. Tumiel presses his lips together and Sark opens his mouth to argue. I hold up my hand. We get the relic piece back to base, and then we go to the Golden City and get our Rue back. Chapter 4 Bastion. The sun has set and the base is settling in for the evening, unaware that a mutiny is about to occur. And if Penemu and I do our job right, then the humans here will never need to know. I doubt that Shem believed anything bad would happen in his absence. He left us in Penemu and Omarosa's care because of their diplomacy skills. I doubt he expected those skills to be used against Watchers who were intent on stealing Michael's sword. It's a mere fluke I overheard Barrakeel's plan to take the sword to the Golden City and use it to negotiate entry. The Watcher is done with being an outcast. He believes that the Celestials will let him in, accept him. According to Penemu, Barrakeel and his cronies are delusional. They also have no idea what it's like close to the Golden City. According to Amoros, they'll die before they make it to the walls. We've made the right call bringing our people here instead of heading to the city. This base is the last bastion of humanity, and I'll protect it until my final breath, which, if the burn in my chest is anything to go by, might be sooner than anticipated. I'll have to hold on long enough to see Rue on her return and get this place set up with some decent security. Long enough to pass on my knowledge and to say goodbye. Just give me that. They're coming, Penemu says from his position by the empty case that a few hours ago contained Michael's sword. Shem left it there, in what was once an ice cream parlor on the east side of the mall, an area where the electrics are shod and no one bothers to visit. He didn't hide the fact from his watchers, but he didn't expect any of them to steal it. Thank fuck the relic piece he already has is hidden somewhere else, somewhere that none of the watchers here know about. Ready? Penemu asks us. Amoros nods, hunching over and flexing his talons, ready to use them if need be. Gadriel merely sighs, his coal-rimmed eyes dark with sorrow at the betrayal of his brothers. Up until this point, I don't think he believed that Barrakeel would truly come, that he'd truly stoop this low. But the bootfalls approaching the metal shutter confirm my word. There is no denying it now. The metal barrier shudders as it's hauled up from the outside to reveal Barrakeel kitted out in his watcher outfit ready to flee. He's accompanied by several other watchers, all of whom take a step back at the sight of Penemu. Not Barrakeel, though. He stands his ground and lifts his chin, glaring down at us with determined derision. How did you find out? He asks. It hardly matters, Penemu says. What matters is that you'd betray us. Betray. The word is a snarl on his lips. Don't talk to me about betrayal. We were all betrayed a long time ago by our leader. He parades around, barking orders, acting as if he's some kind of savior. When it's his fault we're in this mess. His fault we fell. His fault we lost our connection to our light. His fucking fault. Amoros makes a soft sound of distress and hunches over even more, as if Barrakeel's words are a weight settling on his shoulders. I have no idea what Shem did exactly, but I know that what Barrakeel plans to do is wrong. I thought Watchers protected humanity. Barrakeel's eyes narrow as his gaze shifts to me. You have no place in this conversation. I cross my arms. Well, considering that I'm the one who overheard you plotting, I think I do.
his lips thin. I see. This place is a haven you helped build. Why would you leave now? Why give the Celestials anything when they've given you nothing? He holds up his hands, fingers bent into claws. Because of this. He takes a step forward. This is happening to us, faster and faster, despite Shem having found the human who houses his soul. Some of us don't have time to wait for him to find the relic pieces. He looks back at his companions, who nod in agreement. And now that I look closely, I can see the mark of devolution on their bodies, stronger and more prominent than on Gadriel, Penemu, or Amoros. We don't have time, Barakiel says. But if we can gain entry into the Golden City and get access to their celestial light, then maybe we'll survive until... Until Shem completes his quest, Gadriel finishes for him. There's sympathy on the Watcher's face. Understanding, even. You'll die, Amoros says. Now that the airborne beasts are free, they'll take you down before you can get close enough to ask for sanctuary. Then we'll die trying, Barakiel says. You know they won't let you in, Penemu says. Even with the sword. He tips his head to the side, so his dark hair falls back to reveal his scarred cheek. Would you truly give up the human female for a chance to be whole, knowing that you'd be dooming the rest of your brothers to devolution and madness? Knowing you'd be dooming us all to being earthbound? Penemu shakes his head slightly. The Barakiel I know is too valiant and noble to make such a selfish move. Doubt and shame flit across Barakiel's features as Penemu's words settle in his mind and the stark consequences of his plan are highlighted. Things that he probably knew but buried in the shadowy recesses of his mind. Behind him, the other Watchers, too, look as if their doubts have surfaced. This is Penemu's gift, the ability to force someone to look inward. Barakiel's shoulders droop. You've hidden the sword, haven't you? Yes. He makes a gruff sound in the back of his throat. Just as well, because I cannot promise I won't attempt to take it. He held up his hand and studied his fingers. The knobbly joints and black talons look painfully twisted. I'm not sure how long I have. I can't help but feel bad for him. I know what it's like to be hurtling toward the inevitable demise of who you are. Gadriel places his hand on Barakiel's shoulder. We won't let you fall, he addresses all the Watchers. None of you will fall, because when Shem returns with the second piece of the relic, we will demand a healing. Gadriel? Penemu shakes his head. What are you saying? Yes, what was he saying? What does that mean? It means they'll demand a channeling from Rue, Amoros says, his dark, angry eyes fixed on Gadriel. They'll demand she connect to the power and feed us all. You can't do that. You have no idea how it affects her to channel. It could kill her. It will be but a few minutes, Gadriel says. For those Watchers who are closest to devolution, his jaw hardens. There are too few of us left. We have fought beside Shem, for Shem, for this world long enough. Humanity has been our burden for long enough. If wanting to remain whole is a selfish act, then it's one I believe that we deserve. Barakiel lifts his chin. Thank you, brother. He won't allow it, Penemu says. He won't have a choice, Gadriel replies. The humans need us to protect them. He'll give us this selfish act to maintain that protection. I'd seen firsthand what channeling the Morningstar power did to Rue, and that had been to save one life. What would it do to her when she channeled for several? Panic squeezes my heart. We may have stopped Barakiel from leaving with Michael's sword and giving up Rue's location to the Celestials, but in doing so, we've put her life in jeopardy. We're between a rock and a hard place, and I have a nasty feeling we're about to get crushed.
Chapter 5. Rue. Michael flew me toward the central tower while I fought my instinct to fight him, to claw at him and demand he take me back to Shem.
Every bone in my body screamed at me to run, and adrenaline flooded my veins with desperate heat that had nowhere to go, because there was no way back. No way out of...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?